This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Welcome to Campus Voices, where each week we take a look at key issues that affect students, the UK campus, and the Lexington community. I'm your host, Caitlin Schwartz. April is Kentucky's Child Abuse Prevention Month, and today we're talking about what you can do to help children in the war against child abuse. The entire month of April is dedicated to raising awareness for child abuse in Kentucky. In 2014, over 3.2 million children were part of child abuse investigations conducted by federal and state agencies. That number is up 7% from 2010. Children depend on adults to protect them, but there are adults out there that do the exact opposite. Agencies here in Lexington are doing their part to protect children and educate the public about child abuse during the month of April. Today, our discussion begins by tackling the topic head-on. What is child abuse? To help our audience understand the issue at hand, we are joined by three professionals who are dedicated to protecting the children in our region. Our first guest is the Executive Director of Prevent Child Abuse Kentucky, Jill Seifried. Seifried has been with PCAK since 1987. The organization began when Parents Anonymous of Kentucky and Kentucky's chapter of Prevention Child Abuse America merged in the late 1980s. Today, PCAK's goal is to prevent the abuse and neglect of Kentucky's children. Thank you for joining us today, Jill.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Our second guest for this evening is a pediatric hospitalist and assistant professor of pediatrics at UK, Dr. Jamie Pittinger. Dr. Pittinger is certified by the American Board of Pediatrics. Dr. Pittinger works in pediatric hospital medicine at UK. She also has an interest in child abuse. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Our third and final guest is Alicia Miller, the Family Services Office Supervisor for the Southern Bluegrass Region of the Department for Community-Based Services. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
So the first question is for you, Jill. The Federal Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act defines child abuse as any recent act or failure to act on the part of a parent or caretaker, which results in death, serious physical or emotional harm, sexual abuse or exploitation, or an act or failure to act which presents an imminent risk of serious harm. So we'll talk about the Kentucky law about the topic in a little bit, but with a national law that's seemingly clear and concise, of course, why does child abuse still occur?
Oh my. So how long do we have? 30 minutes? It occurs because our protective factors are not what they need to be in our country. There's many kids who fall through the cracks despite great efforts from social services and hospitals across the country and despite prevention efforts. There's a number of risk factors that go into child abuse and neglect. And despite what you may hear and despite what you may read, we don't know what a child abuser looks like. All socioeconomic classes, all communities across the state, but we do know that there are some risk factors associated with what may bring a child into a harmful situation.
According to Child Help, an organization dedicated to the prevention and treatment of child abuse, the United States has one of the worst records among industrial nations. This record says that up to 7 children die each day due to child abuse and neglect. How can the United States be so high on this list?
Again, thanks for starting with the really easy questions with me. I think my colleagues would agree that our society as a whole just doesn't value children. They don't have a voice. They don't vote. We place children in very precarious situations and do not give their families and their caregivers enough support. So when the families are isolated, when there are stress factors, when there is not enough community support or other support within the family, when there's mental health issues, when there's substance abuse issues, all of those things work together and puts a child in a very tenuous situation. And what you find in other countries is that, it's a they take care of their children differently.
Mm-hmm. The Center for Disease Control says there are three major types of child abuse. The first is neglect, which is the failure to provide basic needs. The second is physical, including intentional harm and sexual, which includes fondling and sexual assault of any type. The third is emotional, which disrupts a child's emotional development or sense of self-worth. So, Jamie, how can people recognize these signs of the types of abuse?
So I think the first thing is to have an open discussion. Nobody actually wants to believe that child abuse happens. No one wants to believe that it happens in your community and that you're touched by it. We all are, whether we want to acknowledge it or not. So first of all, have that discussion. The big things, especially in children under one, are to know that it's okay for a baby to cry. That seems kind of simple, but honestly, to know that that's normal for a baby to cry, it's okay to walk away. That would be one of the biggest things we could do as a society overall to prevent a lot of child abuse deaths for children. And just know that children cry more from ages 2 weeks to 8 weeks than any other time in their life, that as long as they're fed, put in an appropriate place, you check to be sure the temperature of the room and all their needs are otherwise met, it's okay to walk away. It's always okay to walk away and take a deep breath. It's never okay to shake a baby.
How do factors such as the lack of education, substance abuse, stress, or similar experiences as a child for the adult in this situation play a role in whether they act the same towards their child?
They all play a very important role. You know, first of all, when you're stressed, your ability to handle stressful situations decreases. Mm-hmm. You know, and also if you don't have that support, being a parent is hard. Being around children is hard, even though people do it all the time. But if you don't feel like you have that outlet or have that support to talk with someone about it or have someone to help you with it, you're already at an increased risk. Mind you, if you don't have daycare or the education to know that if you do shake a child, that that can be harmful. You know, how are we supposed to help people if they don't know what they're doing is wrong to begin with? That's the first thing. But then also knowing where to go for help and where the resources are. And having those resources be publicly available is also very important.
How do I or one of the viewers how are we supposed to know if our relative or our friends are abusive parents to their children? You know, what are some typical signs or anything that maybe you've seen with personal experience?
So I will tell you that the bruising in children 4 weeks of age or younger is never normal. If you see that, that should raise concerns. I don't mean that all bruises are child abuse, but I do mean that that's an escalation of something going on, and it's usually one of the first indicators. I will say, and I believe 2005, there were 41 children that died from abuse under the age of one. Over half of them had documented signs of bruising within 2 weeks of their death. So if you see that, that needs to raise your red flags. But also, you know, if you see a child that's not gaining weight, if you see someone, you know, jerking a child around in public or hitting them or striking them in a way that can be harmful, it's never okay to leave a mark on a child. If you see things like that, you need to talk to somebody.
The CDC associates adverse childhood experiences and dysfunctional households with a range of long-term health impacts. What do we know about the long-term effects of child abuse in terms of a person with their physical, emotional, and mental health?
So there's a study out there called the ACEs study, Adverse Childhood Events. And what they saw is that they're additive. So every adverse childhood event, be it poverty, be it abuse, it adds together. And as they get older, they're higher risk for obesity, depression, high blood pressure, mental illness, alcoholism. They're directly related to many things. There can also be protective factors from the community as well. So what they can find, and that can counteract some of the negative things. But they're long-lasting, and they're very well-linked. It's one of those things and we know if we can prevent them early. One of the big pushes from the cabinet right now for the children in Kentucky is for substance abuse and maternal substance abuse and exposure in utero, and we're trying to educate about that and kind of get that education out there. And we know that if we can prevent that, we can also decrease some of the adverse childhood events that they experience as they get older.
Mm-hmm. The legal system addresses child abuse, as we said before. One of the newest laws in Kentucky, signed by Governor Matt Bevin, asks the Kentucky Supreme Court to establish a pilot program to permit participating courts to make specified juvenile proceedings presumptively open to the public. However, it would also establish guidelines and allow courts to close some hearings if the courts decide it was necessary. On March 29th, the bill was passed unanimously by a vote of 94-0 and was sent to the governor. On April 9, 2010, Governor Bevin signed the bill into law. Alicia, why are open juvenile proceedings important in the fight against child abuse?
And I think I'll have a different stance as other people on this, just because this is what I do. Mm-hmm. I'm in court. I see the cases that are brought to court. And me personally and the agency that I represent, I'm not in favor of the juvenile courts being open. The things that are said in juvenile court, the petitions that are filed in regards to the horrendous things that have happened to kids, I think that opens a whole new box of information that will get out to the public and can be very embarrassing to the kids, not the families necessarily, but the kids that we deal with.
What are the kinds of reasons that some juvenile proceedings close?
I think in regards to sex abuse, definitely. I think that's something that should be closed. That's not something that needs to be talked about outside of the court by whoever wants to come to court that day. I think there are confidentiality laws, and I think that our kids, the families that we deal with, have the right to keep that information, those cases and that information confidential.
Mm-hmm.
If I could just add, too, we had a very interesting conversation before we went on air, and I think just being able to talk about that legislation is important. Lots of different opinions, lots of different views on it, and I think what's good is that it is a pilot project, so the folks in Frankfort recognize that maybe there'll be some kinks to iron out. I mean, yes, there will be kinks to iron out. So what do we need to do differently? What works well? Maybe at the end of the pilot project, which I believe is 4 years, and they will continually monitor it, what we may see at the end of 4 years may be very, very different than what we start out with mm-hmm. the help of and the expertise of a whole lot of people looking at the situations and seeing what's in the best interest of the children.
Kentucky House Bill 111 would mandate every Kentucky public school publish the child abuse hotline number. The child abuse hotline number is 1-877-KY-SAFE-1. That's 1-877-KY-SAFE and the number 1. How can publishing this number in public schools prevent child abuse, do you think? Or do you think it would help at all?
I think there are a lot of people that come in and out of public schools, whether it's relatives, grandparents, community partners. So just having the number published, I think that it puts it out there for people to have easy access to that number. And if they have questions, they can call. If they suspect abuse, they can call. So I don't think it can hurt anything to have it published in public schools.
Mm-hmm. Kentucky's Unified Juvenile Code requires the reporting of neglect, physical, sexual, or emotional abuse, and of children, whether it occurs at home, school, or elsewhere in the community. It also requires investigations and that social services become involved with children who are found to be experiencing maltreatment. The law protects the rights of children. What exactly are the rights children have in Kentucky?
I mean, the children's right in Kentucky. I mean, they have the right to have a home, to have housing. They have a right to be fed, a right to be clothed, a right to an education, a right to have medical care. I mean, I think all of our kids in Kentucky have that right, the right to be able to learn and to have all their basic needs met.
Do all states view child abuse the same as Kentucky? Or is it all different and different, you know, all around the nation?
What we see is that's one reason why it's almost like comparing apples to oranges when someone talks about the rate of child abuse mm-hmm. within Kentucky, and everybody wants to know how do we compare to other states. The reporting is not the same. The tracking is not the same. Kentucky is one of the few states that have mandated laws that mandate reporting. So it's not the same. And on a federal level, that's been a big conversation in terms of how can we get all the states on the same page, and how can we make sure that we are reporting and tracking everything the same, but we're not there yet.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of reporting, how would somebody go about reporting child abuse in Kentucky?
Well, you gave the number out, the 1-800-KENTUCKY-SAFE-1. It's actually 1-877-KENTUCKY-SAFE-1. We also have our local centralized intake, and that number is 859-245-5258. You can always call the police. You can call the Lexington police or whatever local police department. You can report it to the Kentucky State Police. However you want to report it, but anyone that suspects, you don't have to know that abuse or neglect has occurred, but anyone that suspects or has a suspicion is required under law to report that.
So what happens after a child services report is filed?
Once someone calls in and reports allegations of abuse or neglect, it's screened in by the central intake worker, and if it meets our policy to investigate, then it is then sent to an investigative worker who at that time will go out, and depending on what kind of report is, we have different time frames for our initiation. They will go out and interview the victim. If they're at school, then we'll go to school, talk to the victim, talk to any other kids who may be in the home or have knowledge of what had occurred, talk to school staff. And then we're going to want to talk to the non-offending parent prior to talking to the alleged perpetrator. So we know everyone's account of what the events were. And then we're going to talk to the alleged perpetrator at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people don't like getting involved, obviously, in other people's businesses. But what can happen to the child and the bystander if the bystander chooses not to report an incident of the child abuse?
If someone chooses not to report abuse or neglect, they can be charged criminally by the police department.
Is there anything that you guys wish that I would have asked you guys, or that you feel that is important about the topic that should be discussed?
Just to piggyback on what Alicia just said, it's not just the fact that they can have jail time, but you can affect a child for the rest of their life. Not all children die from abuse. A lot don't. But they have to live with the consequences, and they can be, include educational issues, growth and development issues. You can have a profound effect, not to mention you can actually save a life. So it's not just the fact that you'll go to jail, but this is the opportunity to impact a child in a way that can forever change the course of their life.
And what we hear a lot from adults who were harmed as kids, what they say is what made a difference for them is one person. And that one person isn't necessarily the same person for all kids. Sometimes it's someone in their neighborhood, or sometimes it's a school teacher, sometimes it's a social worker, a doctor. But that one person has reached out, intervened, take an interest in the child, made sure that that child is safe, and given care and protection to that child when no one else would or could.
And I think it's important to know also is you can report anonymously. You do not have to leave your name or number if you don't want to get involved, or want somebody to think that you're getting involved in their business or meddling or however it may be. You can call and not leave your name, not leave a contact number for us. But the important thing is that you've called, you've made the report, and if it meets our criteria to investigate, then we're going to go out and make sure that the kids in the home are safe.
Mm-hmm. So April is the designated month in Kentucky to raise awareness for child abuse. What kind of things happen in Kentucky? Any kind of events or anything that does raise awareness in Kentucky for child
abuse? Prevent Child Abuse Kentucky is a statewide prevention organization. So we have, not single-handedly, but with over 100 partners, there at last count, there was about 115 community events throughout the state, ranging from, you know, run, walks, vigils, you know, breakfast, pinwheel plantings. Your listeners can't see me, but I'm wearing a pinwheel lapel pin. The pinwheel is the national symbol for child abuse prevention. So anybody who sees those blue and silver pinwheels kind of spinning in the wind, that is symbol for child abuse prevention. So there's the community events. I think there's a heightened interest or willingness to participate in shows like this throughout the month, and hopefully your all's interest will increase and continue throughout the year. That's what the month is all about, not just doing something in April, but continuing that commitment throughout the 11 months of the year. Other 11 months.
What kind of support have you seen from, I guess, specifically Kentuckians with, I guess, in the month of April with child abuse, you know, programs and, you know, prevention events and stuff like that? What kind of support have you seen from, I guess, just the local community and any of at those runs and walks and marathons and stuff? You know, what kind of people do you see there?
Everybody. I mean, you know, there's elected officials, there's, you know, moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas, and there's kids in school. And I mean, there's no limit to the number or the types of folks who are involved. You know, everyone is welcomed. And some of them are more, I guess I would say kid friendly with the pinwheel plantings and things like that. And then there's other events that are primarily geared towards adults in the community with trainings and getting, providing them with information so that it's we as adults who are taking responsibility for protecting children instead of having children feel like they have to protect themselves.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys know of any events coming up in the near future or in the far future that our audience can attend to?
We have some trainings in May. The best thing I would say for anyone who's listening is to give our call an office. Our call an office. Oh, my gosh. It's been a long day. Our office a call, 225-8879, or log on to our website, pcaky.org, and there's information about trainings and how folks can be involved.
That's awesome. Well, that is all the time we have today for our questions. If you feel that a child is in any danger, you should call the local law enforcement or the Kentucky Child Abuse Hotline. Again, the Child Abuse Hotline is 1-877-KY-SAFE-1. That's 1-877-KY-SAFE and the number 1. We would like to thank our guests for joining us today and for giving us their expert opinions. Thank you for joining us for tonight's Campus Voices. Stay tuned for more commercial-free programming on 88.1 WRFL-FM, Lexington, Kentucky. I'm Caitlin Schwartz.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.FM and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.FM/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.